Hey, the It's Time for Coffee podcast is powered by the Converge Podcast Network. Hey friends, it's time for coffee, and I'm your friend and host, Jeanette. I'm so glad that you're here today. I hope you know by just pressing play on that podcast app, you have a friend with you. My hope is that as you listen, you will know that you are heard, valued, loved, and not alone no matter what stage of life you're in. I hope that you're subscribed so you never miss an episode, and it would mean the world to me if you left a rating or review. I'm so glad you're here, and I cannot wait to introduce you to this week's guest. Y'all, allow me to swoon and fangirl just for a second because I'm so excited about this week's guest. We are sitting down with Laura Tremaine. Y'all, I love everything Laura does, from her podcast 10 Things to Tell You to her new book, I'll Go First. She has an older podcast as well called Smartest Person in the Room, and I loved that show. I just love how Laura is teaching us in a new and interesting way to own the skin we are in. Laura, like myself, is a lover of friendship, and today we are talking about the harder parts, friendship breakups, going first, and owning our insecurities. We are also talking all about books, which is another thing Laura and I have in common, though I think she reads way more than I do. But she does convince me to read a Stephen King book. I haven't done it yet, but it is on my TBR list now for sure. Do you want to read more? Listen in for Laura's tried and true trick that I use. And man, y'all, I'm just so excited for today's episode. So grab your cup, fill it up with whatever you want, and let's dive in.
Today's episode is sponsored by our friends at Dwell Differently. For a fun and unique way to memorize God's word, visit dwelldifferently.com. Now, on to today's show.
Hey, y'all. I'm so excited to be sitting down with one of my favorite podcasters and authors, Laura Tremaine. Hey, how are you?
I am so glad to be here. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, I'm so excited to be sitting down with you. Like, I just kind of like fangirled all over for a second. Just like, I just need you to know how much I love everything you do. And thank you for letting me do that. But I'm just so excited to be sitting down. You, like I said, are one of my very favorites. I love listening to your show. You bring such a, like a breath of fresh air to my life. So this is such an honor. Thank you for having coffee with me.
Well, thank you for saying that because, you know, as a podcaster, you're talking kind of to an empty mic. So when I get feedback, I'm like, okay, actually, thank you for saying that because sometimes I just feel like I'm just talking into the air and hoping for the best.
Yes, I feel that way so often. And it is such a weird dynamic because when people are like, hey, that really meant a lot to me, I'm like, oh, good. I was hoping it would stick somewhere. So, hey, what's in your cup?
Listen, I hope that it's okay that I'm on this show and I don't drink coffee.
Oh, it's fine. It's fine.
Okay. In my cup, always and forever, is Dr. Pepper. I start my day with a Dr. Pepper. Sometimes I end my day with a Dr. Pepper. It's just, it runs through my veins and I'm not afraid of it.
This might be a weird thing to say, but I tell people I was breastfed on Dr. Pepper because my mom is the exact same way. Dr. Pepper through and through. It is, like, if I were to grab her, like, Yeti cup or her, you know, Hydro Flask, I would be like, oh, I'm going to drink some water. And it's Dr. Pepper.
I mean, I relate to that. I don't know if this is actually true or if my mom just jokes about it, but she says that she put Coca-Cola in my bottle. I mean, I actually really hope that that's a joke. I think she is joking, but I don't know. There's enough of a kernel of truth there that maybe that's true.
I love that. Yeah, Dr. Pepper was always in our house. We always had it. I don't enjoy Dr. Pepper anymore. I prefer Coke.
I'm just going to smile and nod at you then.
That's fine. Okay, this is my other question, because we just had your friend Kendra Adachi on the show, and we were talking about whiskey. Do you drop a little bit of whiskey in your Diet Coke every once in a while? I mean, Dr. Pepper.
I do not, but I do like whiskey. I mean, I don't love it. It's not the first thing I will order. But there's a place that we go to sometimes when we travel, back when we used to could travel, and I would order like a whiskey flight, and it was just, you know, like different shots of whiskey from different regions or whatever. And I love that. Like, I love a little bit of whiskey. I do not put it in my Dr. Pepper. And I sometimes forget about whiskey. We don't keep it in the house or anything like that. I forget about it until I'm in a situation where someone else is having it, or it's like featured at the restaurant or something. And then I'm like, oh, why don't I ever drink this?
That's a good one. I just figured that might be like a good little, nice little end cap, nightcap.
Maybe I should. Don't give me that idea now.
Pandemic ways. That's just what's happened in our life. We start the morning with coffee. We end it with a mixed drink. Okay. When you're out and about and you are able to go to a coffee shop, what is your go-to coffee order? Oh no, you don't drink coffee. What do you order at a coffee shop? Nothing?
I don't go to coffee shops that often unless I'm meeting someone who wants to meet there. If I do, I will get – I'm not anti-coffee. Right. I can drink coffee, just like we were saying about whiskey maybe, but I just – I don't crave it.
Yeah.
I don't love it. I'll have a cup with someone. I like tea, but I don't really love tea either. Yeah. What would I get? I don't know. I'd probably just get water and a treat at a coffee shop.
I like that though. That's good. So – I'm so excited because your new book, Show Yourself, I'll Go First, just hit shelves, and it's so good. I was telling you earlier that it's like the perfect amount of like heartfelt, full, but funny and thoughtful, and I just really love it. Where did this stem from? I'm assuming it stemmed from your podcast, 10 Things to Tell You, but I'd love to hear just a little bit about like your heart behind it before we kind of go deeper into this going first topic.
Well, it actually happened before the podcast. The idea is what birthed the podcast, which then birthed the book. But originally, I was a mommy blogger starting when my daughter was born. I started my blog in 2010 and did that for years and years. And through mommy blogging and then as like the rise of social media and Instagram and that kind of thing, I just really got passionate about the idea of sharing. I had started my mommy blog out of a lot of loneliness in my life. I mean, I also wanted to use it as a creative expression, and there were lots of reasons I wanted to be a blogger back in the day. But one of the things that came out of that blog was that after years of loneliness and feeling like I did not have any friends in Los Angeles, all of my good friends were hometown friends, college friends that lived elsewhere, that when I started my blog and just sharing myself, sharing my life, I realized how important that sharing was to sort of like drawing people to me in friendship and just feeling connection. And even if they weren't local to me, just being like, oh my gosh, you know, me too. I feel this way. I can't believe you wrote this thing. Like all of those type of ideas came out of my blog and then social media. And it made me realize the older I got, I was in my 30s. The older I got, I was like so many women around me, around my age with little kids are also lonely. They're also unable to share themselves for some reason or another. You know, they're protecting a family member. They're protecting a career. They've been taught that it's tacky to post a lot of things online or to be too open in a real life conversation. And so the older that they get, the more lonely they are. Everybody was on this trajectory, it felt like. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to be like, let's reroute this. Like instead of all of us waking up, you know, in late 40s and 50s and being desperately lonely or being empty nesters and not sure what to do, let's start earlier. Like let's train ourselves in this time of life when we're really, culture is telling us to shut down and be less of who we are. Let's train ourselves to be more of who we are. And sharing was a huge part of it for me. And so I just really got into that idea. So I started 10 Things to Tell You. Obviously, 10 Things to Tell You is about sharing. The sort of tagline is, I have 10 things to tell. You have 10 things to tell. Let's share our stuff. And then that bore the book, Share Your Stuff, I'll Go First. It's all sort of the natural path of like me just paying attention to what was going down in my online spaces primarily.
I love that. And I think that there's this this worry, and maybe it's mine because I have just been scared. But where's that tipping point of sharing too much or sharing your heart versus like being exploitive? Do you understand that? Like, is there this like good tipping spot, or how do you know, I guess this might be a better way to ask it. How do you know when you're sharing well versus like being exploitive? I don't think you're ever exploitive. So I don't know.
No, I know what you're saying. And we've all seen people do this, right? We've seen people overshare in a way that you think, okay, that should not have been shared, or at least maybe not in that way or on this platform or whatever. Everyone has seen that. I think most of the people I'm talking to, they're not at risk of oversharing. Yeah. Yeah. They're not. They're way undersharing.
Yeah.
People who feel comfortable oversharing, that's a different conversation, honestly. Yeah. And I think that that's a very small percent of the population. Like, think of your wider group of your whole social circle. Maybe you have one or two oversharers, but the majority of people are not sharing very much at all.
Yeah.
They're definitely not sharing enough for sort of deep connection. But I do think as you're learning to share, you might occasionally cross a little bit of a boundary. Now, I don't think that you're just going to like vomit out something incredibly detrimental, but you might share something and then be like, you know what? I'm going to delete that.
Yeah.
Like, this is trial and error. I have to learn what feels good for me. And by the way, I should say, this isn't always about sharing online. This can be in real life. And obviously in a conversation, you can't delete what you said.
But you can ask for grace in those moments. You can say, hey,
ask for grace.
I probably should have shared that.
You can say, I'm not going to share that again. I'm not going to have too much to drink at girls' night out and say this. Next time, I need to be more mindful. And so we're all just learning in all of these scenarios of like what feels good and right. Because I think when you share, even if it's scary and you feel like, oh my gosh, I want to take that back immediately. But then like the next day or as time goes on, you're like, no, that was right. I feel absolute in alignment with that I said that. It was scary. It was vulnerable. It was received however it was received, but I am glad I said it. Mm-hmm. That's a real learning experience. Same as, well, maybe I won't share that next time.
Yeah. And I think taking those learning experiences and being aware, like, I think that's something you talk about so well. It's just like that awareness of like, ooh, that seemed off, or I didn't feel good when I said that. That's a cue. And just being super aware of how we're feeling after those moments is just really, really key. I am the oversharer in my friend group. I've been told I don't have walls around me. I have speed bumps. So there's times where I'm like, hey, whoopsies, overshared, my bad. And they're like, yeah. Well, and because I'm so known and so loved in my group, it's like, we figured you would say something like that. It's fine.
But listen, we need people like that in our groups. I mean, I don't want it to be detrimental to people's livelihoods and careers and whatever, but you have to have someone who goes first, which it sounds like you do, or who maybe if they shared too much, it still gives permission for the other people to share a little bit more than they would have, because somebody was the word vomiter. Okay, it's fine.
Right.
But and, you know, you have to be mindful of it. But still, I appreciate the people in my life, and occasionally it can be me also, but I appreciate the people in my life who are the oversharers, because then I think, well, I feel so awkward for her that she shared that. But also, I'm so glad I'm not the only one.
Right. Well, and there's power, and this is just ties right into your book. There's power in the going first, because there's that me too, like, oh, okay. And so when somebody steps up and says, like, my husband and I have been fighting a ton lately, it's like, oh, okay, me too. Here's what's been going on in our life. Here's some talking points. We have me, the oversharer, and then we have our friend who is such a sweet, like, she can bring everything back around. Like, did you have a discussion about it? Did you guys talk about this? Tonight when you go home, you need to ask them these questions. And she, like, will coach us through, like, really sweet things. And I'm like, I don't want to have a conversation about the throw pillows because I don't think it matters. And she's like, well, if you're upset, then it probably matters. I'm like, this is so silly. But I have to have those people, right? We need every little piece of our puzzle, because otherwise we're lonely.
Exactly.
I love that. Loneliness is something that you and I are both like fighting against. We will not stand for loneliness. In the past few years, how have you seen communities rally around this I'll go first notion?
Well, on my podcast, First Before the Book, I ask a question every week, and you're supposed to take the question or the topic, if it doesn't have a specific question, but you're supposed to use it as a conversation starter in your life. And I have seen so many people do this and end up having conversations that they were either scared to have or they never even thought to have. Mm-hmm. And then after, you know, they ask this kind of conversation starter, icebreaker type of question to their partner or their best friend or their sibling or anyone around them, they have a conversation that they never expected. And then it just deepens that connection. And I'm able to do this online because I'm comfortable sharing myself online.
Yeah.
Not everybody is. I love watching these conversations go down online. Like when people, if I issue a challenge on my show or on social media, which I do really regularly, like for everyone to share a selfie, for example,
yeah,
to everyone to share their own pieces of advice, for example, I do these regular challenges. What happens is, you know, only a very small percentage of the people following me or listening to me participate in these challenges. But when they do, I always like scroll through the hashtag and look. There are comments on their posts from their real life people, you know, who are like, oh my gosh, I never knew this about you. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, thank you for sharing this. This is amazing. How thoughtful. Like, people are glad to see things come through their feed that are a little bit different and that are a breath of fresh air, which is what you said earlier. Like, we can get in a rote, just like a rut of what we, the kind of things we're posting or the kind of things we follow or whatever. And isn't it so nice when you scroll and it's like a friend's face or a friend's original thought, not just resharing a meme or whatever. And I just love, I love seeing that, the little slice I see online and then knowing what's happening offline, like knowing that people are growing and having better conversations, hopefully. It's just, that's the kind of community aspect that I'm trying to build and trying to keep my eye on. And I think that that's the stuff that moves the needle in life. We've gone through this whole year of crazy divisiveness, mm-hmm. which is a different topic really, but I think that it's real deep conversation is what changes people's hearts and minds and like how our culture actually shifts.
One thing I've loved that you and so many of our friends online have showed is like, hey, we can disagree about things, but I can still really like admire the way that you're holding yourself or the way that you say something because it's teaching me, right? Like I can learn so much from people all across the board. And I think that that is how we are supposed to be living. I think that there's this betterment in not agreeing with everybody, or there's this power in saying like, oh, I didn't think about it this way. And that to me is what creates like, one, more self-awareness, and two, deeper relationships, because I can go to a friend and say, hey, I don't agree with where you're at here. And one, I can be told that I'm wrong, or two, I can be told, well, let's talk about it a little bit more. Or I can say, I don't agree, but I don't necessarily know where I'm at right now. And I think that that's the spot that we're not really allowed to sit in anymore. Like, we have to pick a side. We can't sit in this spot of, well, I just don't know. I don't know yet. And I feel like you have showed us, me, through journaling, that I can learn, and I can sit in that middle spot of, like, what do I believe right here, right now? Because it doesn't look like one or the other. Like, I'm kind of stuck in this middle ground. And so I just want to say, like, journaling has helped me so much in that. And that's something that you talk a ton about. So I don't know if you have anything to add to that. It was just my thought process of, like, we're so divided. Yet here, I'm an Enneagram 9, too. So I'm like, I'm just going to sit in the middle because I think everybody looks pretty today.
I think that journaling can help us figure out what we believe.
Yeah.
So a lot of times if I'm in the middle, like I don't really land on either side on this issue or, you know, on this opinion, but I'm not really sure what I believe. And then like my attention span, just like, I don't even try to investigate what I believe. Well, I'm just like, I don't know. And then I just like keep scrolling or whatever, which for some things that's totally fine.
Right,
like
right.
Who cares? But for important things, really important things, and our country is going through some really important things, it's helpful to figure out what you believe and not just try to be like, oh, I'll think about that later.
Right.
And there's research and stuff like that that is, of course, very, very important. But also, if you're stuck, journaling can help you figure out, like, you're not just in the middle. You you believe something,
right?
Like you do.
Absolutely.
Some part of this is important to you. And so writing it down and sort of just exploring, like, what part of this do I believe? What part scares me? What part do I really reject, and why? That will help you. I think that helps us not just come to the table of like, I don't know anything.
Right.
I'm a big fan of the I don't know, or I'm not sure, or you know, being in the middle messy place as we figure it out. What I am not a fan of is using those things as an excuse to not actually figure it out.
Right.
And that's what I see a lot of people being like, oh, I'm a peacekeeper. I don't want to land on either side, which I understand. There's a lot of gray when the sides are extreme as they are right now. But it's not an excuse to just be like, I just feel a little bit of both.
Right. And I think that journaling, that's kind of where I was going, was journaling has, like, you kind of put your thoughts out there and then you can look back and see this pattern of like, oh, okay, well, I do believe a little bit of this. And I do believe a little bit of this. So I can kind of find myself in the middle, but also maybe leaning a little bit more side, more on this aspect. And I think that for me, it's been like, okay, so I agree on this side over here and on this side over here, and finding that like middle ground of like, I don't have to agree with one side wholeheartedly. I can exactly bounce between these things. So I think that's what journaling has taught me this year. We were talking before we started about friendship and friendship breakups. I told you just a little bit about like walking through my own friendship breakup and just the heartbreak that comes with these friendship breakups, and how in our 30s, all of a sudden it's like, oh, we just broke up, but we were just friends. So it's like we talk about relational breakup or like romantic breakups more often than we talk about friendship breakups. So then when we're in our 30s and we break up with a friend, it's like this traumatizing thing, and we have one or two things that we can do. We can just give up on friends altogether, or we can pursue more friendships or healing and deeper friendship. I'd love to hear your thoughts on breakups.
I like people talking about their friendship breakups because I've gone through them myself more than one over the last couple decades, and I've never heard people talk about it in a way that's not like it's this crazy thing. So I remember reading a book about a friendship breakup once, but it was like the deepest grief imaginable. I mean, it was like a divorce, and that is how some of these breakups can be. So I don't dismiss that. I think that it's also okay to talk about it and just sort of normalize that, like, oh, sometimes it happens and it sucks, but you know, like, not all of your romantic breakups are created equal either.
Right.
Same with friendship breakups. Like, there's going to be levels of like, maybe we are not friends anymore.
Yeah.
And then there is going to be like letting things fade out sort of purposefully. And then there are going to be like the deep grief kind. But I like people talking about it. I like you acknowledging that you had one, because whenever I just briefly mention that I've also gone through friendship breakups, I always get messages from people being like, I'm so glad that you said that because I thought there was something wrong with me.
Yeah.
Like, people feel like maybe they were broken up with, or they had to draw a hard boundary and break up with someone else. And it made them feel very isolated. It made them feel like they had something like really wrong with them in a relational sense, because nobody talks about it.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the other reasons we don't talk about it is because I think most friendship breakups in our adulthood are not big dramas. They're
right.
Not big, crazy things. Most of the time they're just sort of drifting away, but maybe kind of purposefully drifting away from someone. And then, you know, you look up and it's been a couple of years and it's fine. It's sort of faded and everyone feels like sort of better about it,
right,
or whatever.
You didn't have to like chase it over and be like, hey, are we okay? Are we good? Because the season's kind of passed and you're like, oh, I guess I don't miss that person like I thought I would, or like I didn't. I just didn't miss that person.
Exactly. Maybe you give yourself some distance with someone because of something that happened or was said or whatever. And you mean for it to just be like a season, like, I'm just going to kind of bow out of this for a couple months. And then, like I said, then, you know, a year goes by and they didn't reciprocate either. And so you're like, oh, I guess we're not so much friends anymore.
Right.
And that's, I think, maybe a pretty common course. And that's completely fine. there's not always big dramas, and maybe that's why people don't feel the need then to like write about it or talk about it or whatever, because it's a little bit of an awkward thing. But I'm glad that you brought it up, because I really do want people to know, if they've gone through a friendship breakup or if they feel like they need to go through a friendship breakup, that it's a totally normal part of life, and it does not make you a weirdo friend. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
It's a thing. People grow out of each other.
Yeah, and I think that sometimes those growing outs can be aggressive and very much like a romantic breakup all of a sudden, where it's like, we are done here. And it's like, oh my gosh, what just happened? And then you have to take that time to grieve that relationship, because in my circumstance, it was someone who I was doing daily life with, and it was like all of a sudden gone. And it felt like a divorce. It felt like that very abrupt end. And it was like, oh, okay, we're done here. And then there's times even now, like 10 months later, where I'm like, oh, that's funny. And I can't text her because there's no relationship here. But then there's also the purposeful stuff behind those breakups that we walk through and we grieve. And I can't tell you how much I've learned about myself, how much I've had to acknowledge even anxiety and not depression, but necessarily like deep feelings of walking through, like, am I a bad friend? What is wrong with me? And it's been really hard, because I'm someone who stands on a platform that says, we need friendship. Well, I love friendship. Like, come on, let's be friends. And then to kind of have this like devil on my shoulder being like, yeah, but you just suffered a really bad friendship breakup. Are you really the person to talk about friendship? And it's like, oh my gosh, like, this is so difficult. And it's one of those things where, yeah, we believe in friendship, but we also know that we're flawed humans and we're going to walk through hard seasons. And it is that same thing too of like, you're not alone, but it's also like so isolating.
Well, the biggest friendship breakup that I've had in adulthood, there wasn't a big drama, but I didn't understand what went wrong. I mean, there was a definitive end.
Yeah.
But there wasn't like a fight where we stood on either side of the line or something like that. I was broken up with. It was a definitive end. And I also didn't know why. Mm. And that was really hard. I would have preferred to have a knockdown, drag out, like, you know.
Fight for it.
Yeah, we disagree kind of thing. Because then you could say, well, we disagreed and then this thing happened and, you know, did our friendship couldn't sustain that disagreement or something like that. I don't know, whatever. There was none of that. It was like, I've also been through romantic breakups where I wasn't quite sure why it ended. And that is so much harder in some ways than having like the big drama, but we're like, all want to be adults. We maybe don't want to have the drama. We maybe want to just put the distance there. But if you're the person who's being distanced and you don't know why, it's painful. And so you know, you might have a hint of why, but you're not totally sure. And it's just, you go through a lot of questions. That's a different type of rejection. Just like in a romantic relationship where like, it's one thing to say, yeah, we want different things for our life. Like we're not a romantic match. It's another thing to be like, wait, was it me? Like, did I say something? Does he not, you know, whatever. Like, I don't like the uncertainty. And like you, I learned a ton from that particular situation. And I feel like, kind of like the worst romantic breakup you'll ever have. You're like, well, I don't think I'll ever go through that again, because next time I will handle this differently, or I will look for signs, or I will whatever. I felt that way after a friendship breakup of like, I don't think I'll ever go through that again, because, you know, you usually don't get really wrecked more than once.
Right. And I think the thing that I learned from it was I need to be wholly me. Because there was some stuff that I was like kind of, I think we do that in romantic relationships. You put on a little bit of a mask where you're like, okay, I can be just this part of me around this person, not wholly me. And then finally speaking up and being like, hey, oh, and then it just being like completely kind of taken away. You're like, oh, so you didn't really actually like me. Okay, that's fine. I can move on from that. And then for me, like I said, it's taught me to be me in every relationship going forward. And with that, also owning my own insecurities.
Yes, that's right. Insecurities are a big part of this. Before, and this is now goes for a few different relationships in my life, insecurities that I had before, and then insecurities that the breakup part, or the rejection part brought out in me. Like I was suddenly like, oh my God, am I a bad person? Am I unlikable? you know, the things I'm choosing to do, like, are they super lame? And I, nobody, you know, like, you know, you just have a lot of, I had a lot of insecurity around it too. I'm glad to use that word because that's so true.
Yeah. And I think for me, it's like, I'm not going to like go into the next friendship with all this baggage and be like, oh, help me. But it's also going to be like, hey, I'm actually walking into this relationship with a little bit of baggage. I just kind of need to show my stuff. Like, are you okay with that? And if they're like, no, we are not a baggage friendship. It's like, okay, cool. I can show up just a little bit here then, instead of pouring your whole self out to this next relationship and it being so, intimidating.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. And now, a message from a network supporter.
Do you want to memorize more of the Bible, but struggle to actually do it? Dwell Differently has developed unique ways to help you memorize one Bible verse each month. They take the first letter of each word in a verse, create a cool design, and then put that design on a key tag, a note card, or a temporary tattoo, letting you take God's word wherever you go. How great is that? They also post daily inspiration on Instagram, share weekly devotionals on their website, and host a podcast, all meant to help you apply this verse to your life. If you're just getting started with your faith or long to go deeper, Dwell Differently is a great way to start. To join their monthly program, visit dwelldifferently.com. That's dwelldifferently.com. Now, back to today's show.
What is coming up in your life? Like, what is it time for in your life right now? You just launched your new book. Your podcast is going strong. You're in LA, so things are still pretty locked down as far as COVID. Hopefully, by the time this airs, we'll be a little bit less locked down. But what is it time for in your life right now?
Well, I launched my book in February, and so I'm hoping now for a little bit of rest. It has been a lot of not just work, but like busyness. And I don't really thrive in that, like with just like back-to-back events and promo and things are due and deadlines and blah, blah, blah. Like that's just not how I like my day to feel so frantic and all that time given to other people. And so I'm really ready to circle back to some time of rest, some family time. We had some amazing family time during the pandemic. Los Angeles was so locked down. It was just the four of us. I have two little kids in our home for many, many months. And that was wonderful and beautiful. And then I had to ramp back up for book stuff. And I realized what all those things I had learned in the pandemic about family time and quiet and less busy. The second that I had to do all this book launch stuff, which I had to do and I was happy to do, but like it made me be like, oh yeah, this is exactly what I don't want to do for long periods of time. So I'm going to do this for this sort of short amount of time. And then now I'm going to go back to all these lessons I learned in the pandemic, which is to have less on my schedule and to have more quiet spaces and to have more family time with just the four of us and all of those things. That's what I'm going into this spring and summer with.
I love that. I think that that's one thing early on. I mean, Texas is way more unlocked than LA, obviously. So my girlfriends and I would meet weekly for coffee over Zoom, like in March and April. And we were like, oh man, this is so nice. There's so much more time. And then I would like, as we unlocked Texas, I would see them like picking up. I'm like, y'all, we all talked about how much we loved slower times, but we're not staying slow. And then I see them and I'm like, oh, I'm so exhausted. I'm like, it's because you're running at 100 miles an hour for not stopping. Not that we are not, but we also like our schedules are just different because our daughter goes to a dormitory school. So she's like out of our home during the week and she comes home on the weekend. So we're really intentional with our weekend times. So it is a little bit more of like, we're just intentionally slow. The pandemic just made us be like slow in our home, which is great. One of the things I have to bring up really quickly because it's changed my life and I can't believe I didn't bring it up before is your 20-minute timer, reading for 20 minutes at a time. I love this so much. I love this so much.
It'll change your life. So you've been doing it? It works for you?
Yeah, I love it. I love it so much. And I'm just like, I can sit and read. I like to read. I've always been a big reader. But just having that intentional 20 minutes is really, really helpful to me. I have some friends who are like, I just can't read. I just can't. And I'm like, well, stop taking your phone to the bathroom with you. Take a book. Like,
exactly.
Just be intentional. Find some loopholes. Your 20-minute timer was my, like, this is my time. Don't bother me. It's 20 minutes. And I have big kids. And so I can be like, don't talk to me for 20 minutes. And they will mostly obey. If I give them screens during the 20 minutes, I'm totally alone.
Right? Same.
But I love your 20-minute timer. And I actually, for the first time, the day your book came out, maybe it was the day after your book came out, I went to a coffee shop. And I was like having a brand new book. And I set my timer for the first time ever in a coffee shop. And I was like, this is magical. Like, it was real nice. I really enjoyed it. So thank you for your 20-minute timer tip.
I feel like I've taught so many people how to get more reading done with that dumb timer. We all have our phones with us all the time. There's a timer function. 20 minutes. You can read, on average, your average size book at 20 minutes a day, you can read in 2 weeks. I mean, I've like mapped it out. Yeah. And so that's a lot more books. That's a couple of books a month at least. And that's more than a lot of people are reading. And so you can do it.
All right. One last question about books. What are you reading right now that you're loving? Or what's something that
I'm
you
not.
Just read?
Oh, you're You won't even believe it. This is the least amount of reading that I've done, like, I mean, in years and years and years and years and years. And I feel like I've preached this stupid 20-minute timer trick for so long. I have 20 minutes to read. It's not that I don't have the 20 minutes. What I've realized is that when most people are saying that they don't have the 20 minutes, it's not that they don't have the 20 minutes. We all have 20 minutes.
Right.
They don't have the brain capacity to focus on a story for 20 minutes. And I didn't ever totally understand that because that's not really how my brain works. And it's, you know, reading is a joy and a habit for me. And so I was like, I just don't get it. In the last couple of months, I totally get it. Like, I'm like, actually, I'm so fried. My brain has never been in so many places at once that when I have sat down, I've been intentional about the time. So I will set the timer and then I just cannot read.
Yeah.
I've never had this. It's very
like
strange.
Too much input.
It's too much input. It goes back to what I was saying about there's too much happening for my personal boundaries, for the way I want to live my life. There's too much happening in my days right now. And I can't focus. And, so that's another reason I want to get back to slower and less stuff on the calendar, because I want to do the things I want to do, which is like reading.
Yes. Well, just so you know, I'm in the middle of Midnight Library.
Oh, I read that.
I'm liking it. It's good.
Yeah, it's good. I like Matt Haig a lot. I mean, it's, you know, for me, I don't like, there's some darkness to that book, but you know, I don't like fluffy books.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a fluffy reader. You're like Stephen King, and I absolutely will not read Stephen King. I read a lot. When I set the 20-minute timer, I'm reading, like nonfiction books. And then I read the most when I go to bed. And so I can't read scary things.
Listen, everything you just said is wrong, because
thank you.
People don't read Stephen King, and he writes things that are not scary. Did you know that?
No, because he's Stephen King. Name is scary.
I know. People have a mental block against the greatest living writer currently, but he does not write only scary things. He writes time travel. He writes, I mean, some sort of suspense, but not like horror, murder, or monsters. I mean, he does write those things, but you can read Stephen King if you want to. That is not scary. I'm so glad you said that, because I've been like, truly, no joke, I think I want to do like a Stephen King class.
My next question for you is, I'm going to read a Stephen King book now, because we're friends and because I feel like I owe this to you. But what book should I read first?
Well, the best book that he's written that's not scary in the last 10 years is easily 11/22/63. It's one of my favorite books of all time. It's time. But the problem is, and the reason I always hesitate to recommend it to people is because it's literally like 900 pages or something. It's so long. Now, it's amazing, and if you're a regular reader, that it will fly by and we'll be fine. But you know, I always hesitate to recommend it to people just because it's so, so, so long. He did write another book, if you're okay with, like, you know, reading minds and stuff like that, but it's not like horror or anything at all, called The Institute.
Okay.
Now, there is some child kidnapping in that book. That happens at the very beginning. That's not a spoiler. But, you know, I don't find that book to be scary at all. It's about the government and mind control. It's not about monsters or whatever. So there's some evilness to, like, but, you know, evil government versus evil scary. I think I need to do a Stephen King class for people.
Please do. I don't know if you need to do it like as a master class for us or a podcast episode, but I will be first in line because my mother-in-law loves him. And I just like, there's that mental block. He's just scary. He's just scary. Like all I see with him is it. And that's it. So I'm going to get these books. I actually run a book club and I might just have to pick it for a book club book. That way it forces me to read it.
I mean, you don't have to read Stephen King. Well, he's not everyone's cup of tea. If you're a fluffy reader, then like having nothing to do with the scary part, like even his stuff that's not horror is dark. I mean, like you have to like dark.
I think you're right that he's a phenomenal author. Like he's so talented that there's something, you know, it's like there's got to be something there where I feel like I do have to at least read one of his books. So I do feel like
I need to do a deep dive. Now I haven't read every single thing he's ever written because he's written like hundreds of books. And I also don't love everything he's written. So not all of his books are created equal at all. I feel like I need to do a deep dive on like and figure out all the different books that are not scary and then kind of reread them and see which ones I recommend, because I know that so much of the people who listen to me talk about books do not like my taste in books. They still listen to me talk about books. I don't know why, but I feel like, all right, I need to find something in the middle for us. It's not quite as dark as what I like, but isn't fluffy either.
That's good. Well, I would be on that. I want that list for sure.
Okay. So I'll try and figure it out.
Laura, thank you for joining me for coffee today. This was so much fun. This was exactly just what I envisioned our time together. Just kind of like bouncing around through topics, having a great conversation, and just having some coffee time or Dr. Pepper time.
I loved it. It was super fun. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Okay. I know I say this all the time, but I loved this conversation with Laura. I really think one of the things I admire most about her is her heart for making sure that we are seen and that our friends are sure that they are seen as well. And now I need to know, have you ever walked through a friendship breakup like Laura and I talked about? And what are your thoughts on Stephen King? These are things I need to know. So hit me up on social media, either on Facebook or Instagram at the Jeanette Tapley on Facebook or at Jeanette Tapley on Instagram and let me know. I'll see you next week for coffee. Thanks so much for joining me for coffee today. I hope that we're already friends on social media, but if we aren't, come find me on Instagram at Jeanette Tapley or on Facebook at The Jeanette Tapley. If you have any questions about the show or what's coming up, be sure to check out itstimeforcoffeepod.com. I hope you have a great week and I can't wait to see you back here next week when it'll be time for coffee. Bye, friend.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.